Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the After Show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Michael Rose. I am joined, as always, by my partner in podcasting crime, Ms. Kelly Guimont.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Kelly. And we are back. We are back on our cadence. We're back on our rhythm. We are unmelted, or at least hopefully some of us unmelted. Kelly, what is going on with the weather in Portland, Oregon? What the hell is happening there?
I wish I knew, because it feels like hell. 106 degrees is not an acceptable temperature in Portland, Oregon, and that's what it was the other day. And
that's
the day
an
before
angle.
That, it was like
that's not even a temperature. That's like an obtuse angle. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not okay. Particularly in Portland, and here's the thing. I know it gets hot other places. I understand that. I know that it gets hotter for longer in other places. I understand that too. But here, like, nobody's prepped for this. Like, lots of houses don't have air conditioning. Like mine, for example. And the problem is we had very warm, and then we had 2 days over 100 degrees. And the reason that that sucks is because overnight, at least in Portland, again, it doesn't cool off enough at night that you can get out ahead of it. So even if overnight I could open windows and put fans in them, like, it's still not cooling the house off to a cool temperature. So that can be really hard. So, I don't have central air. We have a portable air conditioning unit, not a window one, but one of those, like, slightly taller ones that you can roll around from room to room that puts the vent into the window. So we used that to get by, and that helped. But a lot of people can't even get that far. And so, and then there's all the other stuff that goes into that, like everybody's pets and everybody's, chickens and all of, like all of the ripple effect of all of that, like I said, nobody having air conditioning. So there's like cooling centers. And, at one point we had the 1-2 punch of like all these fires in British Columbia, that where all the smoke is coming down. So on top of it being oppressively hot, like, you couldn't go outside even if you wanted to, because the air quality was crap.
Yeah.
So on top of it's stupid hot, like, also if you go outside, it's really hard to breathe, because like if you're outside for a while, the air is really gross and like everything's super hazy. So it made for great sunsets. Like, my Instagram feed was full of awesome sunset pictures because there's all this haze in the air that all turns these amazing colors when the sun goes down. But mostly it was just not fun. So it's getting better, but it's still going to be like mid-90s, upper 90s a couple of days for the next week or so. And normally the highs in August are between like 80 and 85. So it's usually a far more palatable temperature, and it gets cool enough at night. So it was rough there for a while, but it's getting better.
And it's amazing to see what a difference the taking a metropolis or an urban area out of its comfort zone or its comfort area in terms of temperate management. I mean, there are cities in the Southwest that deal with plus 100 weeks all the time, and even they, like, I have a colleague in Tucson, when Phoenix Sky Harbor had to shut down certain jet operations because the runway temperature was above 120, and that's outside the operational envelope for certain jets. It's like,
because the air density is just too much and the planes can't take off. It's
too
not,
thin. Yeah, the air becomes too thin at sea level or at the height of the airport. Loads of fun. Well, I hope that you are going through your phase change back into a semi-solid state.
Yes. Gelatinous at the moment.
A colloid.
But improving. Well, we're not having crazy thunderstorms like you had.
We had insane weather. We had some thunderstorms go through that messed up air travel all across the Northeast. I had a friend who was stuck trying to get to Indianapolis, who was stuck in the airport all day. I had a colleague who was in Pittsburgh on Friday who I don't think got out Friday night. She was texting me during a meeting saying, can you please look for hotels at the Pittsburgh airport for me? I'm using my laptop for this presentation. I can't work in the background. I shouldn't be saying that publicly, but I'm not saying who it was. So presentation secrets to use.
There you go.
Text your colleague and say, find me a hotel, please. So shout out to mystery colleague, who will remain nameless. Speaking of colleagues and speaking of working in the technology industry, which we both have or do, the big sort of foo-for-ah this week was a document, a statement. If it weren't in the context it was, one might call it a Unabomber-style manifesto. Where an unnamed Google employee, who is a dude, a dude-geneer, wrote a 10-page statement of opinion or statement of principles that basically dismissed the company's efforts in terms of gender diversity by saying that, women are intellectually and operationally ill-suited to be engineers. Now, I haven't read the missive, the manifesto. I'm actually reading a very good response from a former Googler, a guy named Jonathan Zunger, who is now no longer works for Google very recently. So he was actually able to say all the things he would have not been able to say as a fairly senior person on the inside. But he basically tore this apart. We don't need to spend a lot of time thinking about the ideas this guy puts forward, because they're based on incorrect assumptions and incorrect conclusions from those assumptions about how engineering works and also how gender works. But I wanted to ask you, what you had heard about this, and also how, looking at the work that you do. Mm-hmm. Specifically to, try to improve the
balance?
Prospects for women, improve the world, but improve the prospects for girls and women in technology. What's your take? How do you feel about this?
Well, for me, part of the conversation about this is primarily this is what we're up against in a lot of ways. And in some cases it's conscious, like it is with this guy, who, by the way, like, not that this is necessarily an upside, but one of the good things to come out of this is that this guy did the world a favor. And so now I know, like, not to bother with this guy, not to waste my time on this guy. Things like that. Like, when you come out and self-identify as this particular variety of jerk, it makes it a lot easier for me to navigate the world. I know, for example, to only use small words when dealing with this person, etc. So, because if I say a big word, it's just going to confuse him, because I'm not supposed to know anything polysyllabic, I'm sure. In his world, that's not a thing. So, for me, like, this is what we're up against. And so when people talk about gender imbalance and getting more women into technology, like, this is one of the things that I tend to point to as it's not entirely up to women to decide. I don't need more women to decide to go into technology. I don't need more women to decide to be engineers. I need the men who are engineers now to be cool about it. And I don't even mean roll out a red carpet because a woman wants to work at your company. I mean, if a woman is there and doing good work, pay her like you would pay anybody else, and recognize that effort the way you would recognize it from anybody else. And I think part of that, this is one of those things that, like, some people are doing this consciously and obviously, like this guy, and some people are doing it unconsciously. And how do you know that, Kelly? Here's how I know. Because my name is spelled K-E-L-L-Y, which could either be a male name or a female name. And I have noticed that I will occasionally, on the strength of my resume, get like a phone screen or something. And when somebody talks to me and realizes that I am in fact female, like, I have not gotten past more than my share of phone screens as a result of that. I feel like that's what it is. If I'd had a deeper voice, maybe I could have gotten an in-person interview. And then at that point, who knows what would have happened. But I do know, I feel like that's been a problem. And the reason I feel like that's been a problem is because I've seen more than one person who has posted a thing about, like, I have a name that could go either way. And as soon as I put Mr. on my resume, I started getting calls.
Right.
So
yeah,
and there's more than one example of that,
right? And it's the, I think you made an interesting point that there is the implicit or almost atmospheric bias that, mm-hmm. that talks to the sort of recruiting and getting in the door challenge that you're facing. But when somebody does stand up like this dude does and says, here's what I think, it's like, okay, thank you for identifying yourself. like thank you for making it explicit, because, mm-hmm. you know, and this again is part of Junger's piece, is like, you know, forget the impact that this was incredibly stupid and harmful. Yeah, he said, you just put out a manifesto inside the company arguing that some large fraction of your colleagues are at root not good enough to do their jobs, and that they're only being kept in their jobs because of some political ideas. And worse than simply thinking these things or saying them in private, you said them in a way that's tried to legitimize this kind of thing across the company. Not only was everything you said in that document wrong, the fact that you did that has caused significant harm to people across the company and the company's ability to function. I'm no longer even at the company, and I've had to spend half of the past day talking to people and cleaning up the mess you made. I can't imagine how much time and emotional energy has been sunk into this, not to mention reputational harm. For its impact on you, do you understand that at this point, as a manager, I could not in good conscience assign anyone to work with you? I certainly couldn't assign any women to deal with this. A good number of the people you might have to work with may simply punch you in the face. And even if there were a group of like-minded individuals I could put you with, nobody would be able to collaborate with them. You've just created a textbook hostile workplace environment.
And not an HR department in the world would convict me.
Right.
Let me just put that out there. But like, and the rest of that is, you know, there's the parts that I don't know that he understands have happened. For example, presuming, you know, mathematically, there's an excellent chance that he's heterosexual, who will date him? You know, who's going to swipe any other direction on him on Tinder? I mean, let's be honest. And if you are a woman who works at Google, if you are a woman who is interviewed at Google, if you are a woman who has heard of Google and you are remotely technologically inclined, somebody has asked you your opinion about this. What do you think, whether it was, did you hear about the latest toolbox to complain about women in tech? Or, you know, honestly, as a person who did work at Google or does work at Google or has heard of Google or, you know, a woman in technology, you know, what do mm-hmm. you think of this guy? Like the conversation that we're having now. Like, so many people have had to spend so much time on this guy who deserves none of that time.
Right.
So, like, that's the rest of it. Because, you know, like, this is not the first conversation I've had about this guy and this manifesto. And it's frustrating because, you know, people want to talk to me about it. And, you know, like, all I can do is sort of say, you know, this is an example. Like, even though a lot of people won't come out and say it, whether they can admit it to themselves or not, a lot of people think this, whether they mean to or don't even know that they are. A lot of people think this way. You know, there's mm-hmm. unconscious bias. You know, it's the same sort of thing as you hear in meetings all the time that, you know, a woman will speak up and say something and nobody listens mm-hmm. until a guy repeats it and then the guy gets all the credit for it. You know, right. It's the same sort of thing. You know, and it happens everywhere. Like, this isn't...
It does.
Part of the problem is that this is not limited to just technology. So... there's that to think about too, but mostly this is why there's AppCamp, and this is why we do what we do. This is why there's Women in Code. This is why there's Black Girls Code. This is why there's some sort of women in technology organization in loads and loads of places now, is because we sort of have to band together and be more visible and be more obvious. And, you know, lots of people don't care. Like, that's sort mm-hmm. of the good thing about seeing this problem in technology, is that there are a significant number of people who just look at code and go, is the code any good or not? Or is the documentation any good or not? Or whatever it is that you're contributing to in some way. Mm-hmm. We'll look at it and go, is it good? All right. And like, not care where it came from, you know, as long as it's advancing whatever the cause is that you're all pulling for, you know, creating an app or, you know, making sure documentation's right or some sort of project, work, whatever. You know, there's a certain amount of that really can be merit-based because there are people who just don't care, who aren't interested in any of those politics. Right. And that's awesome. But not every industry or every field even, you know, has that opportunity where you can just objectively review something and go, is it good? I'll commit. If it's not, you know, I'll kick it back to whoever and tell them to fix it, you know, and I don't care who that is. So there's a certain amount of that too, but like, this is one of the things that AppCamp is trying to sort out. This is one of the things that AppCamp is trying to help. If enough people are interested, if we can get enough developers interested and exposed to other different sorts of jobs, like there's, you know, there's more to apps than just, you know, there's more to iPhone apps than hunching over Xcode and typing something, you know.
Sometimes there's, you know, UX. Sometimes there's working as a team.
Right. And not even just collaboration, but like all the other stuff. And so finding out that there's other things that you can do, you know, whether you're a person who presents your app at meetups or to investors or whatever, or you're a person who works on, you know, UX, UI, you know, that sort of thing. There's a lot more to it than that. And I think that will also help, you know, get more women in. And once it stops being, you know, everybody knows that the person who came to our department is looking for me because I'm the only woman in the department. And they say, I talked to a girl in here, and they go, oh, that's Kelly. Then, you know, go down two aisles and take a left or whatever. Like, 'cause that used to actually happen. Like, I've worked a number of places where I was the only woman in the department, you know, whatever it was. So, I think, you know, when that stops being novel, that, you know, which is one of the things, like I said, we're trying to do with AppCamp. When that stops being novel and I stop being unique by being a woman in IT or a woman in tech support or a woman in, you know, whatever piece of the company I'm in, that will make a difference. When it gets to be less of a big deal, then it won't matter quite so much. And maybe stuff like this will stop happening because people will see, I can contribute just as much as anybody else, maybe more. I can contribute just as high a quality as anyone else. I can contribute, you know, it doesn't matter where it comes from, as long as everybody's doing their share and pulling their weight, it's not a problem.
It is, I think, challenging to look at the environment now and say, well, you know, we're going to change this by being present and by, you know, having the demographics change, because that is fundamentally too slow for some for people's careers and for people's lives.
Like, absolutely,
we can't sort of wait for that, for the you know, purple kangaroo factor to fade away. It's like, oh my gosh, did you see that? You see, there's a woman in this group now. I say that, you know, in my work life, in my work group, we now do have a colleague, an immediate colleague, who is a woman, who actually is a woman of color, who works in my office and is my mentee. And I'm making a conscious effort to not be the senior colleague who is doing those, is creating or acknowledging or even accommodating those behaviors of the kind of discursive stuff you talked about in meetings and like trying really hard to call that out when I see it and to not allow myself to fall into those traps. And I have seen, and I'll say this for public consumption, for private consumption, Salesforce is, I believe, and I think is justifiably considered as one of the best places to work as a woman in technology. Among the best places. We have a lot of engineering leaders who are women. We have a lot of engineers who are women. We have a lot of technical pre-sales people. We have a lot of technical customer care people who are making careers and making space for themselves within the organization. And we have incredible buy-in from the top, and we have incredible executive examples, and we're one of the few companies that has publicly committed to pay equity and has actually put real dollars behind adjusting salaries within the organization to
That's
guarantee
awesome.
Pay equity. And it's a multi-year process, but it is happening. And we have spent millions, plural millions of dollars on making sure that women are compensated equitably based on their roles within the organization. So all that is great. And there are still those moments of, dude, did you really just say, did you really just do that? Did you really just take her idea and repeat it? And
that was out loud where people could hear
it.
We all saw that.
And so yeah. I've had private conversations with colleagues, and I've said, you know, I wanted to let you know that I noticed what happened in that meeting right there. I wanted mm-hmm. to let you know I don't think it's okay, and I wanted to give you the agency and give you the choice and say, do you want me to say something to this person or to this person's manager? Because I don't think it's all right. And in most cases, they have said, thank you. I'll take it up. Like, I'll take ownership of it, or I'll take mm-hmm. my leadership. Because in some ways, again, if I have to wait for a man to complain on my behalf, that's also part of the, in a meta way, that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And really, the most specific, I don't want to get too close to the narrative on this one, yeah. but basically a senior engineering person who was a woman was being addressed or communicated with by a man that I was working with, and I was on vacation, and I saw these emails going back and forth, and I basically had to email my boss and say, this is not okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to put a stop to this now. And it is the job of the ally or the equality champion or the person who's going to be standing up and saying this is not okay to do that, and to do it without shame or without feeling like there's going to be blowback, and right. be prepared if there is. What I was going to suggest is we actually have an equality trailhead. So on Salesforce's learning site, we have a whole module on being an equality champion and how to do this within the organization. And so I'm going
to... Which is great, because it gives you like something to refer back to and a yeah. way to step in and not and not necessarily have it be weird. Like, feel like you're well within your role. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of those things that would fall under other duties as assigned, and sort of make that case, and, you know, have that opportunity, have, you know, a way to walk through some of that. And it might be uncomfortable and it might be weird, and I'm sure, like, it's probably not the greatest feeling for you to have to go up to somebody and be like, what you did there, I see it. And, you know, even when it's not cool, and it's frustrating, you know, like, and it's uncomfortable, and, like, you know, sometimes that stuff can be weird, especially if you're trying to do it like on someone else's behalf, you know. So having that outlet and that trailhead, like, is great. You know, to me, it would be great if everybody had that as, like, part of the HR training, you know, when we all have to go through sort of that eye rolling video when you work in an office, once a year HR has to come show you the video that says, like, you know, don't ask your subordinates on dates and don't comment on how low the blouse is and, you know, all that kind of stuff, like all those things that they have to tell everybody every year, because this is such a problem in, like, all sorts of ways. So it's really nice to have that opportunity, I think.
Yeah. It is. It's great to have that resource and something to point to. And I want to publicly, you know, give a shout out to Chris Duarte, who's the editor in chief of Trailhead and has done an incredible job of bringing the content and also bringing the people together to do stuff like that and create these resources. It's never enough. It's never adequate.
Right.
But it is a good place to start, and it helps.
But it's
build.
A thing. And yeah. for example, Salesforce is backing that up with money, which. Yep. means that they're at least sort of serious about it. Like, that's when you can really tell when a company means what they're saying, is when the money goes into that. So since you gave a shout out, let's give some shout outs, and we'll be
we'll do a quick show. I'm going to give a shout out to at Len Tofu, thanks for listening, and a shout out to Bill Frazier, and shout out to,
wait, who's Bill Frazier?
Bill Frazier is another colleague of mine who gave me some feedback on the show last week, and a shout out.
Hi, Bill Frazier. I hope it was good feedback.
Everybody was really interested in Netgear. I want to say Samsung, of course, not Samsung. In the Netgear management thing, which also
the Netgear tale of woe.
Hi, Ira Goldman, who also gave feedback on that. Thank you, Ira. Hi, Chris Fuller, of course.
Hi, Chris Fuller.
And
the OG,
and just,
shout out.
Gio, just a, we'll follow up more on the neck gear stuff next week. But a couple people pointed out, you know, why not do stuff that's locally managed in terms of security cameras and so forth and locks. And yes, you can do, you can and should do all those things. Don't, you know, don't control your sprinklers solely from the cloud. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have some sort of connectivity for your home network, it means that you can't do things remotely for people who are standing at your
when
front
you're
door.
Not home. Don't right.
Have their key. So, yeah. So that's right, why right, it was right. necessary. So shout outs to all those folks. Hi, Info Driveway. Hi, Tony Walla.
Hi, Javi.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, other Kelly. Kelly Prime. who else is on the shout out list for this week?
Diane. Hi, Diane. Cincy Golf Girl. We love her. And I and by the way, just earlier today, we got the reply on Twitter shout out from Info Driveway, which always makes me chuckle because it, yep. that's when he's listening to the show and when he hears his name. So so whenever Jonathan's Pavlovian. Listening to the show and gets to the shout out section and we're like, hi, Info Driveway, that's when he goes on Twitter and goes, hi, first, I'm Mike D. Rose. And it always pleases me in some like. Weird way that, you know, oh, hey, somebody's listening and paying attention. Shout out to Brittany, purveyor of awesome t-shirts. She's super great. And occasionally I see her in person because she shows up at karaoke when we do karaoke once a month. And at some point we need to figure out when you are going to need to be in Oregon so that we can make sure that it is when we're having karaoke and you can come to that too.
Straight up.
Because both
awesome.
Jean and I probably have duets that we owe you. That need to happen in person. So,
And I also want to give a shout out to Melina, my friend Melina, who had her New York premiere of her spoken word / orchestral piece Hyena last night, and it was amazing.
Awesome.
I think it's going to get covered in the papers. It was a piece that she worked on with her husband, the composer Georg Friedrich Haas. So, Melina did an incredible job. Georg did an incredible job. The Talos Ensemble did an incredible job. It was a high culture night, and it was amazing. so when that is coming to your town, watch out because you're going to want to check it out. And I will put a link. I think there was a BBC simulcast of it at some point, so I'll put link to it. And so it's just, not last night's performance, the one they did in England, but a previous performance. Okay. But it was great, and we were so thrilled to be able to be there. That's pretty much it, Kelly. Where can the people see you and find you and hear you?
Lots of places. You can hear me on the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast, usually on Wednesdays. Sometimes other times I will pop up once in a while. You can also hear me on Greetings from the Uncanny Valley, which is the Westworld podcast I do with Don Melton, which is in its rewatch phase right now. And by rewatch phase, I mean we are watching them again. It's not the second time through. It's like the manyth time through for both of us.
Yep.
But I've been looking at the files because we recorded the rewatches for the first episode, maybe two, and I'm trying to get them edited down because our goal is to make sure that listening to us talk about the rewatch doesn't take as long as the actual episode we're talking about. And with Don and I, that's kind of hard because we just sort of hit record and we're off to the races. So having to chop those down a little bit sometimes is a little more complicated. So those are waiting on me, and I know there are people waiting on them, so those are going to get out the door soon. You can hear Greetings from the Uncanny Valley on the Incomparable Network. I do occasionally pop up on other shows there. I did a show called Unjustly Maligned with Anthony Johnston, who you may know because you may have seen his name in the credits for something recently, because Anthony Johnston is the author of the graphic novel The Coldest City, which is what Atomic Blonde is based on.
What?
Yes!
Crazy.
So I had the best time. So he does this show called Unjustly Maligned, which is for stuff that has been like unnecessarily hated on or overlooked. Mm-hmm. And so we did an episode about an old John Cusack, Tim Robbins movie called Tapeheads, which is one of my favorites. And I love it a lot. And so we watched it and we talked about it and it was so much fun. And Anthony's lovely. And I was so excited to get to do the show. And I was even more excited because Incomparable has a Slack and he will occasionally talk about, you know, like, hey, check out this live stream of the premiere of Atomic Blonde in Berlin and you can hear me talk about stuff. And so, you know, it's yeah. So Anthony's lovely. You should listen to other episodes of Unjustly Maligned because they're a lot of fun. But I did one on Tape Heads, which was super great. And so you can check that out. And I was on Mac Power Users as well recently, so you can check out that episode.
Fantastic.
And the rest of the time, you can find me shooting my mouth off on Twitter, 140 characters at a time, where you can find me as Verso.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mike T. Rose. You can find the show at aftershowpodcast.com and on Twitter at @the_aftershow. And we will
and I
be
do
back.
Wanna, before,
oh,
you, before, we, before we're back, I do want to point out my pick this week is Atomic Blonde. And if I had a backup this week, it would be Go See Atomic Blonde Again. It was so, so great. And I've seen some reviews that sound sort of iffy about it because they're like, yeah, it was this, you know, big action movie. It takes place in a very specific point in time. I'm not giving anything away. It takes place in the 3 days before the Berlin Wall falls in Berlin. So it's a very specific time and a very specific place. And the reviews that I've seen that talk about it sort of not being great are like, yeah, it was just this like spy movie with a bunch of action. And there's the part in the middle where the main character makes out with another girl. And there's like more spy action. Eh. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You're missing the most important piece, which is Charlize Theron is the spy.
Kicking ass and taking names.
And she's all out of gum. Oh, yes. So,
well,
it's stupendous.
I haven't seen it yet. My daughter saw it as part of a triple feature of Spider-Man Homecoming, Dunkirk, and Atomic Blonde. And she said it was fantastic as well.
So good.
I'm going to plan to see it. My pick of the week, which is closing today, is Indecent, which is the Broadway show about the play God of Vengeance. And It's remarkable. It's amazing. It's closing, so if you don't already have tickets,
your pick is over.
You're not literally at it right now, it's too late. However, I'm pleased to know that it has been recorded this week for streaming on the Broadway HD online service.
Well,
and
that's cool.
Also associated with that, if you don't have Broadway HD, you might want to think about getting it because they are going to start streaming Falsettos, the recent production of Falsettos, which is also fantastic.
Nice.
So my pick of the week is Broadway HD, Indecent, and Falsettos. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back very soon, and we will talk to you then.